Hello, I'm Emma Desi, and welcome to another episode of Turning Readers into Writers. If you're brand new here, welcome, and here's what you need to know. This is a community that believes you are never too old to write your first novel. No matter what you've been up to until now, if you're ready to write your book, I'm ready to help you reach the end. I focus on helping you find the time and confidence to begin your writing journey, as well as the craft and skills you need to finish the book. Each week I interview debut authors, editors, and industry experts to keep you motivated, inspired, and educated on all things writing, editing, and publishing. If you want to catch up, head on over to emmadesi.com, where you'll find a wealth of information and tools to help you get started. Before we dive in, this week's episode is brought to you by my free cheat sheet, 30 Top Tips to Find Time to Write. In this guide, I give you 30 ways that you can find time to write in the small gaps that appear between the various errands and tasks and responsibilities that you have in your day-to-day life. Now, you might be thinking that you don't have any time to spare, but I can guarantee these top tips will give you writing time you didn't think you had. If you thought writing always involved a pen and paper or a keyboard, think again. If you thought you needed at least an hour at a time to write your manuscript, I help you reframe that. You won't be disappointed. Get your free copy of 30 Top Tips to Find Time to Write by going to emmadesi.com/30toptips. Okay, let's dive in to today's episode. After having a kid, losing her job, going broke, and moving across countries to live with her parents, Chris Kane started publishing romance under a super secret pen name in 2017. She now shares what she's learned as a full-time, occasionally six-figure author on the Write Away podcast and with the Author Success Mastermind community. So let's find out a little bit more about Chris and her writing, and in particular why she chooses to co-write her stories and the way that she co-writes them. It's something I've always been intrigued to learn more about, and so I'm thrilled to talk to Chris about it today. Let's find out more. Well, Chris, thank you so much for being here today. I'm really excited to talk to you.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Now, one of the first things I often ask people is, you know, what was your journey to writing? How did you become a writer?
I was one of those people who wanted to be a writer from very small. So, which I think is the majority of writers. It's not all of them, but it is the majority. And so I wrote stories throughout school years and rarely finished anything other than, you know, a school assignment. I remember writing, having to make up some kind of folktale style story in grade school. And then I stopped kind of for college, because college takes over, university takes over the brain, and you stop reading for fun and you stop doing anything mental for fun, because that's all gone to schoolwork. And after I got out of university and I moved to Nashville, I had a pretty intense bout of depression, really didn't have any friends because I'd moved to a new area. And my best friend did live in the same city technically, but we were at least 45 minutes away from each other. So I started attending writers meetup groups in Nashville. And that really got me back into the writing brain, having energy, because I don't know how people write without writer friends. I do not know how they do it. I see so many people say, oh, I don't have any writer friends. I'm like, how do you write then? Like, how do you get to the page without the excitement that talking about writing gives you? And that's me. But, and then publishing, I knew I wanted to self-publish for quite a while. Once self-publishing started and I studied it, you know, Amanda Hawking happened and Joe Conrath, and they were making the big bucks, and I didn't expect to be there, but I still didn't finish anything and publish. And that was what, 2009 that the Kindle came out and all that craziness. So I just kind of sat on my bum and wrote things, but didn't finish them. And then I just happened to write this little romance novella, like paranormal romance novella. I want to say it was about 2014, 2015. And then I did finish. It was the first thing I'd ever finished. It was a little over 20,000 words. And I just kind of chunked it on my hard drive and didn't do anything with it. Fast forward, I had my son in 2016, lost my job 3 months later, moved back to New York from Costa Rica with the last bit of money me and my husband at the time had left in our bank accounts. And a friend of mine happened to say to me that week, oh, I found this little niche on Amazon and we should write something in it. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm familiar with that niche from fan fiction. I have something that I can just alter a little bit and publish it. And I'd been in the business long enough. I'd been in publishing adjacent positions in cover writing and editing that I knew you didn't just publish something and then make money. I was like, yeah, we'll publish, you know, three books or whatever, and then we'll start marketing. But it just happened that I had the right cover for the right genre with the right keywords at the right time. And it sold $20 that first day with, and this is in Kindle Unlimited. And I knew that wasn't normal. So I looked at my then husband and I was like, yo, if I just go all in on this, because I was a software developer and I was applying for jobs, but not really excited about going into office. If I just go all in on this, this is it. This is my path. I never have to go into an office again. He's like, well, you have to prove that you can like make $3,000 in a month, which is our baseline of living, before you can stop looking for software development jobs. So I was still applying and doing interviews, but writing my butt off. And the second month, halfway through the month, it was very clear I was going to hit 3,000. He's like, okay, you can stop applying. Like, we can agree on that. And I have not dropped below that amount per month since. And that is not normal.
No. I was just thinking that you're a bit of a unicorn in that way, you know, from the first book, from the first get-go, that not only are you making some money, but actually making livable money as well. So that's...
Yeah. And I don't underplay my hard work, or because in that first month, my co-writer and I put out three stories. One was 20,000 words. One was 13 or 16,000 words. And the other one, I think, was 30,000 words. And then I think we put two out the next month. And some of them were solo and some of them were co-write. And I don't downplay my hard work, but there's so much luck that went into that. Other people have come into this little niche since then and have not had that same luck because of the... Writers come into niches in waves, and a lot of people are looking for quick money. I didn't know that this was a genre that like was making good money. And I happened to come in during a lull, as did my current co-writer and dear friend. She came in a few months after me. And so we hit during this lull and we were producing quickly and we really grabbed people's attention. And then since then, because there were us and a few others who come in around the same time, were very clearly making money. Other people ran in, little gold rush mentality, and it became harder to make money. And it just ebbs and flows in these little genres like that.
Oh, so do you find that now that you're established in that genre, that you're still able to maintain that level of success? Or do you find that it's taken a dip or it changes because now there's more people writing in that niche?
I think we maintain, specifically the series I have with my co-writer, it for both of us, and she is the top earning author in our niche. But for the two of us, the books that make the most, maybe not completely for her, but our series together is the most popular thing we write. And it is how most people are introduced to us. So that series kind of maintains us. When I write solo books, they make quite a bit less. And different books and different series earn different levels. With our co-written books, they're all in the same world, even if they're broken into different series. So most readers see them as the same series. So we've been able to maintain really well over that series, but we can never guarantee like any particular series is going to make a certain amount.
Okay. Ah, it's so interesting. It's, you're right. There is a level of luck, but I think there's also an element of So I write, I read very traditionally. and I'm kind of not in with any particular very niche genre. So I think there is an element, if you're the kind of person who's already looking for something different and for something exciting, then you're already kind of giving yourself a bit of a, not head start, but a leg up, because you're willing to be out there and looking for new things. Whereas I have to admit, I stick to kind of what I see around me rather than seeking out new things. But something that's always been kind of impressed me about you is, and tell me if I'm wrong, but you appear to have a very good sense of yourself and what you're capable of, and confidence with your writing. So even thinking about that first story that you put out, thinking, oh, do you know what, I've got a story that might fit with this genre, let me put it out and see what happens. I think a lot of us, particularly newbies, would be going, oh, I don't know, oh, let me fret about this a little bit more, do I have to rewrite the whole thing, and or do I need to change it all up? But it feels like you went, I'm going to give this a go, and you did.
I definitely did with that story, and there are two reasons for it, because I'm internally a default basket case. I have learned a lot of strategies to not be a basket case, but thanks to childhood trauma, anxiety is a default for me. And I have learned a lot of how to manage that and for it to not be a default for me all the time. But with that first book, one, I was publishing it under a pen name and a shared pen name. So my co-writer and I were both writing under the same pen name, whether it was co-writes or solos. And two, I didn't expect anybody to see it at all. And I think that's a really good expectation to have when you're publishing your first book. Most people write a book of their hearts, a book they really want people to see. And that's the first book they put out there. And I think mentally, that's probably not the best thing you can do. The best thing to do is write a book like it's an assignment that you kind of don't care about, but that you want to hit all the marks that the teacher tells you you have to mark. And then you publish that like it's an assignment. I think that's the best way to start.
Just to get over that hump of fear of just getting it done and going through the motions almost. And then you've broken.
Absolutely.
Right. I like it. It's a good approach. So you've mentioned it a couple of times that you co-write, and it's certainly one of the things that's all, it does fascinate me. I, by nature, I'm a bit of a lone wolf. I think many writers tend to be, but I know that you co-write. I know Jay Thorne, who we both kind of in his community, he co-writes as well. He's a big advocate of that. So there's a couple of things I'd love to ask you. And the first one is, do you think that co-writing is more suited to certain personality types, or do you think it's something that we tell ourselves that this is a lone wolf job, but actually we could all co-write if we wanted to?
I think that just like anyone can write, anyone can co-write, but not everyone's going to be happy doing so. And that's okay.
Yeah,
I think everyone should try it probably once, but you don't have to like it. And people who go into it thinking like, this is a way I'm going to write faster, sometimes that's true, sometimes it is not. Okay. There's this like dictation. Sometimes dictation will be faster for different writers, and sometimes it will actually slow people down. But for some maybe medical reasons, the reason I started dictating was pain from sitting at the computer so much. Sometimes you just have to do things that do make you slow because that's what gets the work done.
Okay. And so you've worked with, I think, three different co-writers now. So how do you guys get together and kind of think, oh, we'd like to work together? Do you know each other's work separately and like what you've read and so think it would be a good union, or are you friends and then you think, oh, it'd be fun to work together? How does it work?
Yeah, for me, both of those. So I think I've had four co-writers that I can think of off the top of my head, and the first one, who was like, oh, we should write this genre, I'd been her editor for quite a while, and so I was very familiar with her style. And it was a very different style from mine. But because I was familiar with it, I was like, okay, I can absolutely work with this and we can blend. That relationship flamed out very brightly over communication issues, and sadly ended that friendship because of broken trust. So that is always a risk with co-writing if you do not both have the same importance of communication. Mm-hmm. Moment, please. I've got massive noise going in the background. We have vegetable trucks that drive up 3 times a day, and we just go buy our veggies from the truck half the time.
Oh, nice.
And they shout out. Okay, they shout out there. I have my filter on, but I can't think when they go by.
That's lovely. Then we out to the truck and just, hey, yes. I'm going to take this, and this. Oh, nice.
Of course, we have our favorite truck, so we make sure it's him, you know, all that. But my next co-writer is the one I've been writing with the longest, and that's where we have a over 20 book world with, I think we're on series number 4 and 5 that we're writing co-currently. And we were both in a really dark place. My dog had passed. I can't remember what health issues were going on in her family. And I was like, let's just write something to distract ourselves. We didn't really expect it to go anywhere. It was very different from anything else that either of us had read, more of a soldier group trope, and each soldier finds, you know, the love of their life. And so we went dark and we went 13-year-old boy humor and just completely distracted ourselves from what was going on in our lives. And readers loved it. And so now we are 20-some books later. But after the first series, we were both like, okay, we're done. Like, that was a good experience. But both of us had frustrations that we were like, nah, I don't really want to do this anymore. But we came back a couple months later because we were still really good friends. And we discussed our business moves with each other and our schedules just to bounce back and forth. And I was telling her what was going on with me. And she was telling me what was going on with her. She said, why don't we write another series? Because that'll help us with our schedules and our time frames. And I said, okay, yeah, but I've got some stipulations. She's like, I do too. And mine were about scheduling. I hate feeling pressed, and I hate running up against, getting crunched against deadlines. And hers was, we were currently publishing everything under my KDB account, but we started our own company because it had proved that it made enough money to support that and moved it onto its own KDP account so that she could access it if there was anything that needed to be changed or updated or Amazon flops that needed to be addressed. We both have access. And we've been going really good since then. We are looking at wrapping up this world kind of this year, mostly because I want to get out of romance. It was not a genre I intended to write in ever. And yet here I am, and I'm a little exhausted. It's been over 50 books in less than 4 years. And I'm like, okay, let me go do something new. Because one of the hardest things about romance is that it is such a tightly bound in expectations genre. So you have to learn those expectations. But once you learn those expectations, you can write an emotionally satisfying book every time. And so I've gotten to a level of not mastery, I would say, but of understanding, and I like high upper journeyman level in romance. And I'm like, okay, I'm not interested in going really any farther because I've learned a lot. Best paid internship of my life. And I want to go do other things. I want to go learn other things because I'm getting bored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask a little bit about that. I don't write in series, but I do kind of wonder that about people who do. Do you ever get fed up with the same world and want to expand your horizons a little bit? So I think you've kind of answered that one for me. But I want to kind of delve in a little bit more to the nuts and bolts of co-writing. So I just kind of was thinking earlier. So first of all, you have if we think of it in terms of IP, you have a joint asset together. I have delved into the property world, and then when people kind of do a joint venture together, we have a contract that says, this is what you're bringing to the table, this is what the other person is. Do you do the same thing with your co-writers? Do you have a contract that stipulates who's doing what, who's responsible for what the royalty division is, that kind of thing? Or have you found it's actually worked quite well just being very loosely done?
I should have done contracts, but no, I was too early on and Devil May Care. And so I had to do actually quite a bit of negotiation with the co-writer that our relationship failed. And we chose to split the books and decided who got what. And because up until that point, I was just paying even shares, even after we weren't talking anymore, still sending the money every month. And then I was like, hey, like, I would like to take ownership of these two books, because we had actually written them. There were three of us that had written them, my old co-writer, my current co-writer, and me. I was like, current co-writer and I would like to take this and finish the series. You can have basically all the other books, which I think was like six or seven, instead. And we'll just call it even Stevens. And so we had went back and forth a bit to get the contract and like hammered out on that. And then that's what we did. I pulled the books off, handed her all the files that I had, and I kept the rights and uploaded them to my co-writers in my account. And then we were good. Other than that, my current co-writer and I, because these books do make quite a bit of money, we keep meaning to write a contract, especially because her health is quite not good. Because if something happens to her, or if something happens to me, the other one takes control of the account, and then we'll take a certain percentage for managing, and so like 5-10%, and then the rest, the 40-45% of the earnings will go to our co-writers, inheritors. So we need to write that up for certain sure. And we also have talked, we've talked a lot about having, you know, anything that you write further in the world without the other person gets a certain percentage because of the intellectual property of the world. But the other person gets the majority of it.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like a good, yeah. So that there can be no, because even what I've certainly, I mean, I don't know if you've experienced this, but certainly just in my own family life, it does, the two, like you and your co-writer can agree it, but it doesn't mean that the descendants agree.
Yeah.
So problems can arise. But yeah, it's probably.
And I'm writing a solo series in our world right now. And, with her, but her name's on the book, and she, like, our intention has been for her to give it a once over pass just to make sure like she's solid with everything that's in there before it gets published. And with health and COVID and everything, she has not been able to on the two books that have been published. But I had to argue with her to get her to take a percentage, and she's like, you're writing them, you should take all the money. I was like, girl, here's the thing though, if you don't take a percentage, you will not feel like you have the right to tell me that something doesn't work. And if something doesn't work, it's going to affect our entire world, and you're going to build resentment, and that's going to cause big problems for us down the line. I need you to feel like you have ownership over these books so that you feel like you can tell me like that you don't want something to happen for the sake of the entire world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's big picture thinking there. That's
yeah.
And generous thinking too, because it would be, you know, I'm sure not everybody would. It would be easier to just go, okay, well, this is mine and I'm going to hold on to it. So I applaud you for that.
Well, I mean, that just leads to resentment down the line, and I don't want that.
So if we think about you and the lady you're co-writing with now, how does it work? So you both know you've got this world, you both know the world, but how does it work in terms of coming up with story ideas, character names, and personality, kind of, you know, the character development, let alone the plots? Mm-hmm. How does that all kind of come together and work between the two of you?
We've tried to structure these series pretty similar. It's kind of, you think of the Jack Reacher books, like they've got a fairly similar structure every time. And that's somewhat how we've approached this, but just from a romance point of view. So every series has a team, and those are the main characters of our series, generally about six, because that's a really good number for a series. And then when we sit down to plot out the first book, we figure out what the team members' names are and just some basic characteristics about them and their personality. And when we first started, because we didn't have any idea where this was going, we really didn't plot out an arc that was going to go from first book to last book. We have with our most recent series, we know who the bad, like that there's a hidden bad guy that is going to be revealed and dealt with by the last book. And then we sit down, and it takes maybe about 2 hours now. We sit down, we say, okay, this book is going to be this many chapters. And it's generally 12 to 16 for us. And now it's gotten to the point where it's like, how many days do we have? How many days do we have to get this book written out? Because it takes us each a day per chapter. And so that's two chapters per day. And so this last book, we're like, we want to write less days. So we're going to make it 12 chapters. And so next, I already have first chapter done. We're writing it next week. We'll have it done in a week. And so for each of us, that's 2,000 to 3,000 words a day average. Okay. And then we sit down and we tell each other the story. We've gotten to the point where we don't necessarily tell it to each other in chronological order. We start with chapter one and we start saying, yeah, this happens, this needs to happen, this needs to happen. Once we hit a point where we're like, I don't really know what needs to happen next, then we go to the end because we know how it needs to end, and we work our way backwards a little bit and see how much room we have between that and the end, and then figure out what needs to go in where. So in between
development stage, this is when you sit down for 2 hours and figure out the plot line.
Yep.
Okay.
And then our outlines have been anywhere from 2,000 words to 7,000 words. They don't generally get to 7,000 words anymore because we're quick on it. And then we just take turns generally writing chapters. One of the things we actually started doing in the last few books, because she's been having trouble getting into a scene with everything that's been going on in her life, is I will write the first half of a chapter. And then she'll jump in and continue it because she's in the mode of writing. Then she can write the first half of the next chapter. And we've been writing middle to middle instead of chapter front to chapter end. And that's been a really interesting and fun tactic as well.
So do you find then that you've got a similar style of writing? Because that would be, how do you kind of meld that so that it's not obvious that it's two different writers?
Because we read each other's chapter and make changes as we go through, mostly additions rather than deletions. I discovered, and this is one of those things that differs from co-writer to co-writer, I discovered, I think during our second series, I was being a little bit more heavy-handed with edits because I've viewed them as suggestions. Like, hey, if this works for you, take it. If not, don't worry. She viewed them as, if I cared enough to make a change, then I absolutely wanted it there. And so once we had this conversation about her resentment and frustration about this, I actually started making less, I stopped making less suggestion changes and just more additive. Like, ooh, I think this would add to the scene if I did this, versus like, hey, instead, like, why don't we do this? With another co-writer, we would tear each other's chapters apart, where sometimes it would be just as much edits as it was original draft, but we were both really comfortable with that level because we trusted the other to make it strong. So with both of those styles, though, the style gets pretty melded. And I think on my end, I don't know about my co-writer, I haven't asked her this. I think I pick up a specific style when I'm writing our books versus when I'm writing other books.
Okay, so kind of as it sounds like you're able to kind of mold your style to fit the joint style that you've got there, and then perhaps more kind of freedom perhaps, or you can be more experimental, but you can try and do things when you're writing your own stuff.
Or even with other co-writers, I can be a little bit more loose and free because like we because there's more back and forth and writing over top of each other, like it just will naturally meld there. But with our books, I feel like I do meld just slightly to that particular style versus when I write other things.
Oh, and has it changed, do you feel, over the years that you've been writing together? Presumably it's gotten easier as you know each other better.
And just knowing more what the expectations are, and also, you know, we've tripped up over several things, and for me, one of those things is getting crunched against a deadline. Right now, we're not doing pre-orders, even though pre-orders work wonderfully for us, because between health and emotional things, we have gotten ourselves crunched up against our pre-order deadlines enough that we're not going to do them. We're not going to do long pre-orders anymore. We're not going to put up a pre-order until it goes to the editor, because we know exactly how much time we're going to take once it goes to the editor.
Yeah, no, that's something I'm too scared to do, is have pre-orders.
Ideal is to have books done and put, like, you know, years in advance. I don't know if you know Rachel Amphlett, but she's currently writing her 2022 books, because she's already got, like, at the end of 2019, she already had all of her 2021 books and half of 2022 books done. And so they were just ready to go to their next stage, and they were on a calendar. That's ideal. Like, I love that. That's my goal.
Yeah, that sounds taking the pressure off quite a lot, that you know you're 2 years ahead. That'd be lovely.
Right? You're like, if I get sick, it's fine.
Yeah, you've got breathing room. So you are a full-time writer, you're a full-time mum. So what does the kind of structure of your working day or your working week look like? How do you fit everything in?
I actually hired a nanny fairly early on. The original agreement was that my ex was going to be a stay-at-home dad taking care of the kid. That did not work out very well. And so I hired a nanny who's wonderful. And she takes the kiddo from 8 or 9, depending on whether he was at my house or his dad's house, and then until 3 or 4, again, depending on which parent. And so Monday, Wednesday, Friday, my day starts at 8 after he goes off with the nanny. She sometimes comes to the house, or she just comes and picks him up, and they go run around in the ocean in the sun. And then those days, my work days can go late as I want. But most of the time I just work here and there, and I'll go off. I don't have a super strict schedule on those days. Tuesdays and Thursdays, I get early mornings, which is my prime time for work. I love early mornings. I've been sleeping until 6, so I haven't been getting, like, my dark hours working time. And when I can start work at 4, I can get so much done by the time 8 o'clock rolls around. But I haven't been waking up that early, so that hasn't been happening. And then Thursdays, I have my 2 podcast recording sessions scheduled. So I do work up until 3 o'clock on Thursdays, but then I get the kiddo and we just hang out in the evenings.
So what do you feel it is about the kind of 4 a.m. start that triggers
the just a morning person. I'm a morning person. There's no one else is awake making sounds. Like right now, I mentioned the truck going by, the food truck. That's the loudest one. But trucks go up and down. Motorcycles go up and down. I can hear my neighbor doing construction work. There's just more noise, I think, and that derails my brain a little bit, even if I'm not consciously paying attention to it. Because I live in Costa Rica and we don't have we just don't have insulated houses. The window behind me is very unusual in that it does have glass closing windows. Most windows here and most of the houses I've lived at are just screen windows. So you can hear sound all the time coming in and out of them. And, you know, when it's the howlers and the toucans, that's lovely. When it is your neighbors having a karaoke night, it's a little different.
Yes, I can imagine. Well, you're painting such a lovely picture, though. You know, I'm in the, you know, dark, cold Europe, and there you are with toucans outside in Costa Rica and the beach. and all the rest of
it.
Yeah, I can't feel too sorry for you there.
But no, no.
It sounds like as long as you get your 2,000 to 3,000 words done a day, then that's kind of good for the rest of it. Do you do, is there kind of marketing that you do for your books, the sort of admin side of things? Or do you not do you have to do too much of that?
I'll come back to that question, but I just wanted to note for listeners, like, I actually don't write 2,000 to 3,000 words a day unless I'm on a co-writing book. I spent most of February not writing because we ran up on two deadlines at the very end of January that wiped me out. And I think I maybe wrote 2 days of February, which is not my ideal. I don't like that. But I'm determined to write at least 1,000 words a day this month to try and avoid such a run up against deadlines again. But as far as marketing, the most marketing I do really is my email, which I actually hire somebody to do because I hate doing it. And it's a weekly email and I have a very set formula. Because we publish monthly, I have basically 3 weeks of content planned. Hey, here's the pre-order. Don't forget to order it. Hey, the book is out. And then the third week is like, oh my gosh, guys, thank you so much for reading the book. Here's some great things you've said about it. If you haven't left your review, go do so. And then the fourth week, I generally have something else going on, whether it's a sale or an audiobook is releasing or whatnot. And so I generally have every week covered with something new coming out. And I not ideal. It's a little fast for what my ideal is, but it is what I've got right now. And I've got a system that works.
Yeah.
Other marketing. Yeah. I've lucked out in that my co-writer is such a good Facebook marketer. She's just really, it's really natural for her to engage with people. And it's not one-on-one, love it. Small group, love it. Particularly writers. If you don't have one of my special interests for basically writing, but there's a few other things, then I don't know how to talk to you for the most part. I score pretty high on like self-diagnosis for autism. So at some point, like that's going to be a pursuit, but I'm just like people, I don't understand en masse. I do not understand people. But I need them to live. So, but I've lucked out with her being a natural at that. And she'd been, I think, in other positions with sales before. Okay. So
she knows what it's all about. Now thank you for sharing that. You've mentioned that you have a podcast called Write Away, which I listen to and I really, really enjoy. You do that with JP. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that and what prompted you to start it.
I'd been wanting to start a podcast to nerd out about writing for a year or two before I started it. I'm not really sure how much time, but I wanted to have a clearer idea of what my focus would be rather than just popping on and rambling. And I tried to be an interview show at first, but then I found that was extremely draining for me to, one, have to schedule interviews, and then two, have to do the interviews because that involved research and deciding on questions. And I was very transparent with my process as I was putting out those beginning episodes, being like, hey guys, I'm still figuring out what works. And I tried to do some solo episodes, but those I needed to script. I couldn't just sit in front of a microphone and jabber at it coherently without long pauses. So I ended up talking to my friend JP and being like, hey, you wouldn't be interested by any chance in joining me as co-host. And so we jabber at each other and it's lovely. We do want to do a few more interviews with folks. We've got some stuff saved up and we're doing some fun episodes because we're tarot geeks as well. And so we've been doing some fun tarot stuff as far as like planning our business using tarot or like looking at our year on our Substack. And we just this morning recorded an episode on how to write a short story using tarot, part 1 of 2. And he's done that before. I haven't. And so it's just been so much more energetic to work with him. And for any Clifton Strengths geeks out there, he's high in ideation. So when I was like, hey, if you wouldn't mind like putting down like a few ideas of things you'd like to talk about, that'd be great. And he's like, okay, cool. Here's 40. I'm like, wow, amazing. Excellent. Yeah, so that has been lovely. Great addition. And then we have a monthly book club, which is just an excuse to talk with other writers about craft and business books. And that's been just a blast as well.
Cool. Okay. Well, I'm definitely going to link to that in the show notes for people so they can jump aboard and listen. And I have to say, I love the graphic that you've got for Right Away. It's really clever.
That was JP. He did it.
Did he? Oh, it's really good.
Yeah.
Go and check it out. But you, just before we started recording, you told me that you have started a second podcast. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah. So I've been a member of the Author Success Mastermind for, it's over 2 years. I can't remember exactly when Jay Thorne started it, but it moved into a community format from just a small group of 12 to a larger group on Slack about a year ago. And you're a member of this. You're also a member of the smaller mastermind this year. And we have had questions that pop up fairly regularly, you know, both in the community and when we're just talking to people in general. And we thought one of the really good ways for us to delve deep, since it's hard to type everything up on Slack, would be to talk to each other about it on a podcast. And so we have the Author Success Mastermind podcast, which is a mouthful, coming out. I don't know when this episode go live, but as of this recording, it's coming out on Tuesday. So by the time people hear this, it'll probably be live. We do have a trailer episode out there just so people can hit subscribe. And it's been fun. We banked a few episodes to start, and I don't know, we get into some good and juicy things. I like it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to listening to it. Definitely. So I'm conscious of time, but before we kind of wrap things up, I'd love to know a little bit about what you're working on right now, but not just your co-writing stuff. I'd love to know a little bit more about what your passion projects might be at the moment. What are you working on?
Yeah, my goal is to start releasing fiction, specifically science fiction and fantasy, under my actual name, Chris Kane. Excuse me. And I found when I tried working on it at the same time as my romance that I didn't have energy. I just got completely distracted by one project or the other. And I kept getting frustrated because I would either not have enough energy for the science fiction fantasy stuff, or I would put a lot of attention on it and then run up against a deadline for the romance stuff, and or just be like, oh, I need to go make money now. So my goal is to finish up the romance stuff this year. Mostly there'll be a few other trailing off books that I do need to finish up in 2022 so that I can stock money away in my bank account to cover me to just focus on writing science fiction and fantasy. I have a co-writing science fiction project that has just kind of been meandering. My co-writer is a slow writer, and we're doing that one differently. With romance, it's always been alternating chapters. With my co-writer, I'm doing the first draft, and they will do the editing phase. And they did the outlining phase. Like, I would pop in and be like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if, but they're a structure geek, so it's been wonderful. And they're a world building geek. It's wonderful. I have another sci-fi that I started kind of writing into the dark. And I have a cozy mystery placed on an island in Georgia that just makes me laugh every time I pick it up. And so that's probably the first novel I'll finish, just because it brings me so much joy. And I probably have the most clarity about that one of all the solo projects I have. But yeah, they're all kind of waiting for me to have energy. But I plan on writing short stories in between these other romance writing projects to maybe put out there to like just establish a presence maybe submit to some anthologies and some magazines, and just start trying to get myself in the habit of putting myself out there as my real self and not behind a pen name.
Yeah. And it'll be nice, kind of what Joanna Penn calls a palate cleanser. It'll be nice to try just have something different. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow, you are a busy, busy lady. My goodness. Well, listen, where can listeners find out more about you online? Or can they?
They can, but not the romance, super secret. But I do have my website, chriskane.com. There's not much there. It needs an overhaul, but also rightawaypodcast.com and theauthorsuccessmastermind.com and TikTok. If you're a TikTok, it's Chris Kane.
Perfect. Lovely. Well, thank you, Chris Kane, very much for your time today. It was lovely speaking to you.
Thank you, Emma.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you found that helpful and inspirational. Now, don't forget to come on over to Facebook and join my group, Turning Readers into Writers. It is especially for you if you are a beginner writer who is looking to write their first novel. If you join the group, you will also find a free cheat sheet there called 3 Secret Hacks to Write with Consistency. So go to emmadesi.com/turningreadersintowriters, hit join. Can't wait to see you in there. All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.